All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this Saturday, June 30th, 2018. I'm Anthony Scorsia, and across the table from me is co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop, friend, man, myth, legend, Woody Lashin. How you doing, Woody?
I'm doing great as always, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
It's going to be another scorcher out there today.
The weather we've had, I'll take the scorcher. Thank you very much.
I'll take it until December. How about that?
Yes, I'm in.
The
sign
spring,
me up.
Considering the winter and spring we had. Yep. A little ridiculous.
So let me be able to play some golf, please.
Yes, exactly. Looking forward to our guest today. We're going to be talking with Chris Voschel. We're going deep on tech, Mizuno tech, so to speak, specifically. So we're sort of in your wheelhouse for today.
I think he's a little ahead of my wheelhouse. He's actually designing the golf clubs.
Right, but you know, we're going to be, but we don't get a chance to always go, you know, super tech oriented. So this is kind of a nice treat for you. It's a nice treat for our listeners. It's a nice treat for me because, you know, I've learned a lot and our friendship and our relationship.
But, and this morning before the show started, you learned a lot.
exactly. So, no, like, and so I think that's important for our listeners to get a little piece of that piece of the golf business. You know, we spend a lot of time on the human side of it and the relationship side of it and getting, you know, digging into what people think and why they do certain things. And so this is kind of a nice little thing in the technology side of it. I find it interesting.
Well, I'm excited. Always great to talk to a genius. I'll call him a genius.
Genius. Yeah. I won't tell him you said that. All right. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to have Mizuno engineer Chris Voschel. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony. He's Woody Lashin, co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop. And on the line is Mizuno brand manager, Chris Voschel. Chris, how you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm doing great this morning. How are you guys?
We're doing all right. Now, better for having you on the show. Tell us a little bit about this. You were previously, I guess, titled as an engineer. I'm sure you still have your hand in that a little bit. But tell us a little bit about your new position as the Mizuno brand manager.
Yeah, so I've been with Mizuno for, going on 14 and a half years, and I spent my first 14 of those years all in R&D, doing club design, you know, working with the tour staff, working with the engineering team, all that stuff. And just recently, I've switched over to the business side, which allows me to still have my hands in designing or working the direction of the product, mm-hmm. but also trying to take hold of the business direction we're going with everything and set up our product lineups and all that stuff. So it's pretty exciting change.
So tell us a little bit about that. Like, it's got to be a lot different than designing golf clubs.
It is. It's a lot different. So, you know, the thing with being an engineer, it's awesome because you get to create the product, but ultimately the product direction and where the lineup sits and how it's going to be priced, how it's going to fit in the market, and how it's going to fit against all the competitors was being dictated by the brand side. So, you know, they'll say, we got to hit this number, so we need this much, we need this product and all that, which from the engineering side is great because you get to make the best product possible. But at the same time, you know, if you don't think the product lines up, you know, it's ultimately, you got to make it anyway. So by switching over to the brand side, it really gives to me, a new perspective, because I get to think about it not only from the engineering of the golf club, but how that whole lineup's going to sit in terms of how it's going to drive the business. But ultimately, with an engineer in charge of that, I love it, because we get to say, you know, we're not just making this from a marketing reason. We're making this for a reason, because it fits in the lineup better.
Well, Chris, you know, my experience has been that I'm not a big fan of most marketing guys.
Right.
Well, there's so many times. There's so many products that have come to market where, you know, they're marketing and advertising it for X, and it's really Y. And the thing that excites me about having you do that at Mizuno is that that's not happening, because you know exactly how everything works, and it's gonna be marketed and put in the right direction, and maybe Mizuno will do something a little differently, because you can say, hey, look, we've got this product, we can get it to work, it will work, because you know it from the engineering standpoint. So
well, it seems like, and if I may just jump in, it just seems like they sort of wanted to marry the two, because there was always seems to be a difference between the engineering side and the marketing side, and somewhere the two shall meet. And it seems like they just made you that guy, so that there wasn't two different entities sort of coming to meet in the middle.
I think that's exactly right. You know, it's from the engineering side, it's easy to look at a company X's profile and just say, hey, I get why they made that club. Marketing drove that club. Engineering drove that club.
Right.
With Mizuno, we never want that to be the case. So that's why they literally put an engineer in charge of what the product direction is going to be. So to me, as Woody was saying, though, it'll hopefully get us going in the right direction with everything, and everything will make sense, and everything will be driven from an engineering point of view.
Well, speaking of that, the product lineup and trying to figure it out, all that stuff, I don't know how much you can or cannot say, but how far along are you in terms of into the future? Do you plan these products out? What's the sort of product calendar look like for you? Is it 2 years, 3 years, 4 years? As someone who's not familiar with that side of the business, how far out can you plan?
So obviously we try to plan out as far as possible. There's a document we have where we have it out into like 2021, 2022, but all of those are very, very fluid and flexible. As of right now, the 2019 line, we're deep in it enough that 2019 is set. We know what's coming for 2019. Those clubs are in the final stages of going to mass production. We're going to start actually, I've got the first set of one of them sitting on my desk right now, which is pretty exciting. So you'll see those later this year, and those are going to live on the 2019 line. The 2020 stuff is the stuff that we're deep in engineering right now. So we've got the initial direction set up, but ultimately you can't let the spreadsheet dictate where you're going to go with everything. Mm-hmm. So we're in the stages right now of doing all that testing to making sure this product lineup, you know, marries well with not only our business direction, but also our performance direction, making sure we're touching all the types of players we're wanting to touch and hitting on all the performance attributes that we're looking to hit.
Just stay on the line after the show. I'll give you my address. Make sure we get all that. I want to be first one testing this. No, I'm just kidding.
He's lefty. Good luck.
I'm a lefty. Good luck. I know. The redheaded stepchild of golf. I get it. What do you guys
don't talk to me.
Well, I know Anthony would love to talk about the future, but we can only talk a little bit about the future till it comes out. So let's talk about the present. Let's talk about what club just won the U.S. Open and what was the drive behind that.
Yeah, that's a crazy story. I mean, that's not something you hear about all the time.
No, that was a cool story. It almost worked out like it's too good to be true, because the background behind this was, excuse me, for those that don't know, Brooks Koepka just won the U.S. Open using a set of Mizuno JPX 900 Tour irons. And while that's his second year in a row using them, it's pretty incredible, because when we were developing that set of irons, we had this whole concept of, you know, JPX has always been our game improvement line aimed at the higher handicap, but the tour players had always used our MP line aimed at the lower handicap. Mm-hmm. So it's like we're paying the tour guys to play a club that doesn't really resonate or connect to the layman, you know, the average golfer. So the idea was, can we create a set of golf clubs within the JPX line that speaks to the tour? And with that, we were like, well, you know, we've got Luke Donald on our staff, and time we had Charles Howell on our staff. Metcalf, Jonathan Bird. You know, these guys are very much MP traditional looking guys. You know, they look the part of, you know, it's funny how our guys happen to be polo guys. Like they
right. No, I don't think there's any coincidence there. I think that makes perfect sense to me.
It totally does. So the idea with this club is we need to find a different guy.
Right.
So we started to look around at who was out there, who was up and coming, and who was going to be, you know, we thought the future, that could be the future of JPX, and our eyes landed on Brooks Koepka. You know,
if you don't mind me jumping in, how did you come to that? Like, how did that? I mean, obviously you had a list of guys, and you know, big whiteboard, and you're fleshing this out, and what was it about Brooks? What was it about his numbers? What was it about his game? What was it about him personally that you guys fleshed out and landed on him?
You know, there's all sorts of stuff. We've got a team who's out there looking at the collegiate golfers, you know, the guys on the mini tours and everything, and seeing what everybody's doing. You know, at the time, Brooks was playing on the European tour, which, you know, following the route of Peter Uihlein, going over there, you know, establishing himself over there and working his way to the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
So we saw that, and we saw, you know, he was winning over there. He plays an aggressive style of golf. You know, he gets out there, he's not afraid. He's got this quiet confidence about him where he steps up and he just rips it. And it's funny, we actually there was an article, I believe it was in one of the Japanese golf magazines when we were all over in Japan talking about it, and I just happened to open up this book, and it was an interview with Steve Williams saying, he talked about, you know, watching people hit golf balls, the only guy who I've ever seen hit a golf ball like Tiger Woods is Brooks Koepka.
Yes.
And that like, that just rang even truer that we were following the right guy, somebody who was like that. So that's why we kind of zeroed in on him. He looks the part, he talks the part, he's just the modern player. And that's kind of who we designed that golf club in mind with.
Sure.
So what was cool about it was, you know, he signed with Nike, unfortunately. We weren't able to get him at the time. And then when Nike exited the hard goods, he was on the prowl. He was out looking. So, you know, we're always very cognizant not to step on anybody's toes.
Sure.
We don't get overly aggressive out on tour. You know, we come to us and we're happy to supply you with stuff. So Brooks is one of those guys who said, I'm going to try everything. He asked for a set of those. And then to our delight, he showed up with those at the West Coast last year.
So how do you have that conversation? So here you have a guy who you really like, and he's a professional golfer. He's winning on the European Tour. He comes over to the U.S. side, signs with Nike, then he loses Nike. And then you have to sit down with him and say, we don't want you to play a player's iron. We want you to play like a 16 handicap iron. Like, I'm just saying, like,
not a 16 handicap iron. Easy, but
it's a player's iron. I mean, it's a player improvement. I'm being exaggerating for my point.
Right.
But look at Woody getting all defensive Mizuno right away. Look at this. It's like, hey, easy. It's like about to jump across the table here. No, but you get my point. It's like, you're not, you weren't selling the tour goods is what I'm saying. As you said earlier. Right. So how do you have that conversation without him being like, what? You know what I mean?
Because you hear stories about manufacturers trying to shove game improvement lines on people in the past. Like, I think the perfect example that pops into my head was Camila Vijayas was playing incredible with Cobra, come off two wins in the FedEx Cup, goes to TaylorMade, and the first thing they do is they try to make him the face of the RBZ brand. And, you know, he's got big old game improvement clubs in his bag, and he just struggled ever since.
Right.
So we by no means wanted to do anything like that.
Okay.
So with Brooks, what it was is, I mean, because we didn't have him on staff, we can't really tell him much. We can't say, play this, not this. We were very fortunate in that our designers and engineers working, trying to design a club that, in our mind, that we thought he would like, he picked it out. So it wasn't even any sales.
So you didn't have to even bring it up. That's pretty interesting.
Well, I think, Andy, what you understand is that he's not on staff with Mizuno. He's playing those clubs because he wants to play them.
Right.
So it's kind of was a perfect storm, right? They designed it with him in mind. Mind, but they couldn't go, oh, Brooks, we designed this with you in mind. He was playing Nike clubs.
Right.
Then he loses his Nike contract, and he's like looking around for clubs, and he happens to come across this because that's what he would be looking for.
Right.
So it's the perfect storm.
It shows that our design direction and our design intent and the execution on it was spot on.
How how did, so tell us a little bit about that. What was that like? How did you come to, I mean, you know, you, now you have the prototype, what were, how do you, and you, and obviously you said you can't talk to them, so you can't, and you're not going to, you're not going to go to Nike and say, hey, we need those numbers. So like, so how are you discerning all this?
Well, what's funny is it's amazing what you can find on the internet. So if you do some searching, TrackMan actually posts a lot of their players' numbers. So he's a TrackMan player, and we were able to find all of his launch conditions throughout his bag on just online through Google searches. So from there, you know, we know that he's a guy who, and obviously it's, a lot of it's fairly obvious without having seen the actual numbers.
Right.
He's an aggressive guy, strong angle of descent. He's wanting to flatten out his ball flight. You can tell that by the specs of the clubs in his bag, by the models that he's chosen. So we knew this needed to be a compact head, thin top line, thin sole, low sweet spot for a penetrating trajectory. And at the same time, we wanted the look from behind to kind of speak to how he dressed, how he looked, you know, more aggressive, strong angles, hard lines. Like, you know, it gets a little bit artsy in there, but really it's all part of why somebody thinks something is cool. We look at what he's always chosen and try to make something that speaks to that.
Folks, a little comment, by the way. When you say, look at his TrackMan numbers, remember, it's a tour professional. Hits the ball in the center of the club face every time.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Right. If you're a good amateur player at a 2-3 handicap, you don't hit the ball in the center every time. Forget about the average player who's a 15 handicap. So you can look at those numbers because you know he's hitting the ball in the center of the club every time. You can't do that in your game.
Wait, Mizuno didn't call you and ask for my numbers? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, not exactly.
I say, we got your numbers. We need to talk.
We need to talk. You got that right. Our guest is Mizuno brand manager Chris Voschel. We're going to take a short break. More from him when we get back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Founded in the early 1990s, Tri-State Turfgrass Research Foundation exists to improve golf course conditions throughout the tri-state area, positively impacting millions of golfers each year. The foundation identifies key turfgrass problems, solicits donations, and works with the university professors to solve these problems through integrated pest management. Since its inception, Tri-State has raised $1.1 million for turfgrass research. We would like to thank the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association for their continued support. If you would like to make a donation, visit tristateturf.org. Once again, that's tristateturf.org.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill level golfers. From our MP18 family, featuring three different models designed for the better player, to our JPX family, featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness, we have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
All right, and we're back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. I'm Anthony Scorsia. He's Woody Lashin, and on the line is Mizuno brand manager Chris Voschel. Chris, we just talked about the designing clubs for a player like Brooks Koepka, U.S. Open champion, and a great champion he is. But now, so we talked a little bit about the technology and what you're implementing for a guy like him. What are you doing for a guy like me? What are you doing for the mid, maybe the higher single-digit handicap or mid-handicapper? How are you helping me?
You know, you look at that, you know, section of the golf market, that's really the fastest growing in terms of models that are being created for that type of player, the high single digit, the low double digit, you know, that between like the 7 and the 15. You even look at it, you know, we call it the player's distance category, seems to be just exploding. You look at, you know, Titleist comes with the AP3, Callaway comes with the Apex line, TaylorMade's got the M3 stuff. It seems like there's just a lot of good options in there. Mm-hmm. And that's because you can design a golf club that checks every box for that.
Right.
You know, if we're working on a player's club, then you're really not going to do anything like thinning out the face, increasing the COR, because really feel is the number one attribute that you're going for, feel and control. When you're designing a, you know, super game improvement club, moment of inertia is really the number one thing you're looking at, either that or COR. When you're designing for this kind of that range of golfer, though, when you're designing designing for the high single-digit handicap, you get to try to check every box. And these are the most well-rounded, really best-performing clubs on all different categories. So with that, we're trying to work on feel with our grain flow forging process, our HD process. We're working on the moment of inertia in terms of strategically weighting, you know, out towards the toe to increase the MOI, to also bring the center of gravity back to make it launch a little bit easier. We're increasing the COR by thinning out parts of the face in strategic ways. So it's cool because these are the type of golf clubs that really can work for high, you know, high handicap, low handicap, and everywhere in between. So we really don't want to give up anything. Like, we want to make a club that's great at everything, if that makes sense.
Sure.
It makes a lot of sense. Chris, one of the things that I get all the time from people is that, oh, I just made the loft stronger, that's why the clubs go further. And and I explain to them that that's not the case. That's not, you know, they didn't just make the loft stronger. Can you give us a little bit of insight from an engineering standpoint, as opposed to me explaining it, you explain it, what's going on here?
You know, there's a lot going on in the industry in terms of lofts, and ultimately in terms of what overall equates to distance, loft is king. That's the number one. That's the easiest way to make a club go longer. But when you start de-lofting golf clubs, you get long irons that don't go high enough. You get loft compression at the top end of the set where your 3-iron goes the same as your 4-iron, as your 5-iron. So what we're trying to do is, even though some of the golf clubs are getting slightly stronger, we're pairing that with mass properties that speak to those new lofts. What I mean is, if you can lower the sweet spot, which is basically, you know, the center of the center of gravity where it hits on the club face, if you can lower that, then that means that the ball is going to launch higher. So if you had a traditional loft with an even lower sweet spot, that ball might actually come up shorter and, you know, fly too high. So we're trying to pair the sweet spot location with the stronger loft, and then all of that speaks to, you got to have the moment of inertia, you got to have the COR right, and we're trying to create consistent peak heights. That's one thing we always talk about when we're doing designs, is the 5-iron going to be able to get to the same height as the 7-iron? And if you make it too strong with a sweet spot that's not low enough, it's not going to do that, and then your set's not going to flow properly. So one of the things we try to focus on is making sure, and that, you know, this speaks to the fitting side of the world, is make sure working with your fitter, you can see that these long irons are going to peak out at a high enough height to be able to perform for you.
About Chris, about 10 years ago, I probably was on the, a little, because of my relationship and friendship with Woody, I was probably ahead of the curve in terms of mixing and matching clubs, in terms of getting things that were fitted for me, and not everything was a brand specific, because not everything matched up that worked for me. But then you guys took it one step to stay ahead of the curve. You guys took it a step further, where you're actually with designing sets that could be mixed and matched, which doesn't, you know, most people are saying, well, you could do that, but you can get fitted for that, but that doesn't necessarily make it easy to do. But you came up with a model that, or sets of clubs that were designed to do this. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, to be ahead of the game with that is a great thing. You know, you look back, I'm going to call it, I'm going to get my years wrong, I'm going to call it 8-9 years ago, there was the Bridgestone basically combo set that came out that was really great set. There was the Nike Pro combo, and these were really just, you know, combining blade-like short irons with more forgiving long irons and putting them into one set. With our new MP18 line, we wanted to take that a step further. You know, as opposed to those sets where they say your blade has to stop at the 7,
right,
cavity back has to start at the 6.
Right.
We wanted to create, it's funny, when we would present the line, I would say, I'm about to show you 4 different golf clubs, but I want you to think of this as one set of golf clubs, because ultimately, you're not going to buy 4 sets. You're going to buy one set, and you're going to make the set that works for you.
Right.
So with the MP18, we designed a blade design, a shallow cavity back design, a multi-material design, and a hybrid type long iron design, all that share a ton of things that make them easy to combo together. The lofts match up, the offsets match up, the head weights match up, which a lot of people don't think about, is a huge thing. Because ultimately, when a lot of people are trying to combine sets, the stock shaft dictates the head weight. So if you have a lighter stock shaft and a more forgiving one, the head weight gets too heavy, and then you get swing weight problems. So that matches up, the top line matches up, the head shape matches up, everything. So really, it's, you know, where, what's the perfect 7-iron of these four for you? What's the perfect 6-iron? What's the perfect 5? Because no two people are the same. Sure. And that's where working with a fitter lets you really pull a ton of different levers to say, you know, maybe I'm a good mid-iron player, and by the time I get to the 5, that's when I want to stop working the ball. That's when I want it to just go high and straight. So that's when you bring this club in. So with that set, I mean, that was the whole design concept, was this is one set of golf clubs. This is not 4 sets of clubs.
When they brought that to you, now you were probably, I think you were at that point still on the engineering side, I believe.
I think he brought it to them, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just going to say, like, well, if you did, like, how was that received? Well, if they brought it to you, what was your, did your head explode, number one, or number two? Like, because I can imagine them saying, you bringing that to them, and, you know, I can imagine you being like, you know, sort of like, I'm just thinking of, you know, the image of having all these calculations in your head, because like you said, there's a myriad of computations that can be done, you know, for different people who are going to have different sets. So if you brought it to them, how were you able to say it in a simple way where they would buy into it?
So it did. It came from the engineering side paired with the fitting side. We work very closely with Bill Price, who's our director of fitting. We work extremely close with him. And what we did is we said, you know, we were looking at an MP launch, and then we were trying to say, because if you look at all the bags of the people internally, we're all playing combo sets. We were all doing that naturally, but there was always some hindrances in terms of what would be the perfect ones to play. So we actually pitched to them. So we went to them, we're like, hey, so we've got this idea of we want to create this set that's going to mix and match. It's going to mean we can't do some things we've done in the past. You know, traditionally, the cavity back has been a little bit bigger than the one we made for this round just because of the blending. Traditionally, the lofts would have done this. The offsets would have done this. And we basically said, trust us as engineers. We're going to make a set to, and the way we actually finally got it through was to say, we could make an MP set of golf clubs that an 18 handicapper could play because we're combining it with everything we have. We're using all of our technologies and building a fitting story behind it. So ultimately, traditionally an MP has only spoke to the low single digit handicaps, but by the time you throw some fly highs in and the 6, 5, 4, you got a set that is going to launch easy, it's going to be plenty forgiving, and that a lot of different players could play. So we justified it that way, and the business side agreed. So
Chris, a half an hour is simply just not enough time to talk to you. But I think we're going to have to get you, plan to get you on a schedule this fall when there's some new stuff to talk about.
I'm happy to. We got some new stuff coming, and we're getting ready to start talking about it, and we can't wait to come back on and tell some more stories.
Well, Chris Rochelle, Mizuno Brand Manager, I'm really, thank you so much for your time this morning. Appreciate it. You know, in talking to you, I understand why there's a brand loyalty amongst Mizuno players. So thanks again for being on the show.
Appreciate that, and thanks for you guys, and keep preaching the fitting message. You guys are doing it right.
All right, thanks Chris. All right, that was Chris Rochelle from the Mizuno Brand Manager. Woody, we got about 2 minutes left, but you had an event near and dear to your heart, the Long Island Am at Wheatley Hills, a great event put on by a great host for an event for a great organization in the Long Island Golf Association. What a wonderful week it must have been for you as members.
It was a great event. I think showcased the golf course. I'm hoping that everybody who played enjoyed playing the golf course, seeing some of the changes we've made.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was some great competition. A couple of Wheatley guys did pretty good. Oliver, you won 2 matches. It was a great event. All members enjoyed it. I think the LIAJ enjoyed it. So
did the golf course play? Well, we'll talk about that another time. We got to hear the music. That's it, folks. Thank you for joining us on On Par with Anthony Scorsia. We'll catch you next week.